Oh, yeah.
For the first time.
Great. No, the...
I'm going to close one for my audio.
That's true. I have to boost up your audio anyway, so it doesn't matter. Yeah, no, it is patently obvious that Snakes on a Plane was originally PG-13. Like, every scene where you see someone swearing...
Yeah. Was added after the fact.
It's completely... And it's obvious.
Yeah. Or, like, that scene in the bathroom where they're like... What's the worst place we can have people bite? Oh, how about a lady's boob?
On her bare tit.
Yeah. Yeah.
No, they told Sam Jackson that, you know, we're going to make this movie. He's like, I'm in. And they said,
of course he did.
Because he's in for everything.
Right.
And they said, all right, we're going to call it something like Flight 193 or something stupid like that. And he's like, no. Call it Snakes on a Plane. Like, no, we were joking about that. That was our pitch for what the movie is. And he says, no, that's the name of the movie.
Yeah.
The best part about that movie was they had marketing for it where, like, you could go to a website and put in somebody's number and then put in their name. And it was a pre-recorded Samuel Jackson that would call their cell phone and greet them personally. And
didn't
say,
hey, I do that to you?
Yeah, you did. Hey. I need you on this plane.
Wow.
Snakes on this plane.
I thought I did that to you.
Because I answered Samuel Jackson. Adam. What? This is Samuel Jackson. What? It's actually him. I'm going to need you this weekend. Because we're going to treat these motherfucking snakes. What is happening?
Oh, man.
Yeah, that was fun.
Is that like when you get key rings at those spinning kiosks where they never have my name?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, they never have my son's name.
Scratch, like the connection.
Yeah,
the
I have gotten some of those in the past where it's like, let's turn this U into an O. Yep.
Yeah, Holden is just shit out of luck for any of that stuff.
Yeah.
Hey, you got a whole book, so you deal with it.
Yeah. So, I think there's going to be an epic failure on the part of Peter Jackson if in the third Hobbit movie, like, they don't have a prequel the same way they told Gollum's story at the beginning of, is it Two Towers?
No, it was Return.
Well, it was Return. Yeah. So in the third movie, they had that little sequence where they prequeled and they did Gollum's story. They need to do the same thing for the third Hobbit movie and do a prequel at the beginning. And have Michael Fassbender be Gandalf, young Gandalf, since he's already young Magneto.
That would be a tremendous missed opportunity.
Am I not? Yes.
That would be fantastic.
And don't tell anybody. Like, don't advertise it at all. Just, you show up and you watch it and just sploosh.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Huh.
Is that everything you got?
Mostly. Hey, this is Tony.
This is Jolie.
This is David.
We are the Backseat Producers. Daryl didn't see the show, so... He's not here.
Daryl's Carcosa.
Next week, we're talking about Godzilla. The week after that, we're talking about X-Men. Tonight, we're talking about True Detective.
Godzilla is king of monsters, Tony.
I heard that about him.
Did you see that Bryan Cranston did an interview where he complained about what an awful co-star Godzilla was? He's like, he's so arrogant. Never wants to... Yeah, I know the movie's named after him, but, I mean, come on. There are other people in the movie. He's just kind of a jerk.
That's fantastic.
That's adorable.
Bryan Cranston is my favorite thing from the last 5 years.
I can see that.
But I appreciate him for him, not like Idris Elba. I pretty much just appreciate him for his body.
Idris Elba?
Yeah.
Not his DJing abilities, or...
His DJing abilities are pretty hot. And he's Heimdall, which is also attractive to me.
Sure.
And he was in that Mumford & Sons music video for some reason. I don't know what that reason is, but he was in it.
Because they're both British. I don't know. Hey, I've got a question for everyone. Unrelated question. So, I went to a party this weekend that was, it's one of those rare parties that you hear about that was like 80 to 90% female.
What?
Yeah. These do exist. I've been to a couple of them.
That doesn't sound like fun.
Sounds like a taco fest.
No.
Instead of a sausage fest.
No, clam
well,
bait.
That's
clam
that's
bait.
The thing that's is we were I was having this argument. What do you call a party that is mostly women?
It's clam bake.
Is it a clam bake?
It's a clam bake.
All right.
I know that's very northeastern of us, but
very. Listen, when there are not men around, women get just as stupid drunk. But but
when the chances
still,
of being raped are much lower,
way lower.
It turns out
because,
women like that fun.
Yeah, because it also happens to be that the remaining men, a lot of them are also gay.
Yeah.
So that helps things quite a lot. Yeah. So I'm just letting you know these magic parties do exist. I can't tell you where they are though.
I don't doubt that they exist. They just don't sound any fun to me.
Why Why wouldn't they be any fun though?
Because at the point that I show up at the party,
yeah,
that party no longer
you
exists.
The party.
It's Schrodinger's party to me.
That is a good point.
By the time I observe that party, it does not exist.
You become Chekhov's penis at that point.
It's gonna go off. Trust me.
Gotcha. Well, you gotta have an in. You gotta know somebody who knows somebody. Yeah.
Kind of don't want to go in general. Molina has like those women's night out. None of that sounds fun.
Like, it's a different thing, though. Yeah, because when you have, like, if you have, like, a girls' night out, it's usually like, well, we're going to go to dance or, you know, it's usually something like that. And I don't go
down to
that.
Look of disgust and disdain on your face is awesome.
Oh, God. I went to, a couple of years ago, I had to go to a bachelorette party. And it was like it was the worst night of my life. And to this day, I have like a little post-traumatic stress about having to, like, oh shit, I gotta go dancing. Fuck. Yeah.
I don't know. Usually in our groups, like the idea of the ladies' night out really just cuts out the fun people.
That is a little bit of a risk, but I happen to be going to lady parties where all the ladies are really fun and interesting.
See, like, Julie has her high school friends that occasionally, like, one of them will come back to town for some reason.
Mm-hmm.
So it's like they all have this idea that they're going to get together. Let's go get together. Get together means they're going to go to, like, Applebee's.
Ooh.
And have dinner. Then maybe go back to one of their houses and sit around and talk.
Drink Bartles and James.
No, because Julie doesn't even drink wine. She won't drink. Well, no, because most time, you know, like, the one can't drive at night.
What?
And the other, I mean, the other ones have kids, and
Tony, if you don't bring
the
a
other
box,
one,
Franzia,
the other one has
some
to put her,
wine.
The other one has to go home and put her old man husband to bed if she's not getting drunk out of her ass.
I need to be put to bed, so I understand.
Well.
Responsibilities.
Who brought the box Chardonnay? Hey.
All right. True Detective, what are your high-level thoughts?
Tony, I think this is the best piece of media we've had since Breaking Bad.
Interesting. What do you think?
I would agree with him on that. Like, I had this very conversation after watching it the first time around, since I have now seen it twice. But we were sort of debating as to whether Breaking Bad was better. I tend to think that Breaking Bad is better, but this is just, it's so good. The show's so good. It's one of my favorites.
I have two thoughts. One, you have come 180 since we've started recording this podcast, in that you used to, like, get really annoyed with the character study movies that we talked about. And this show was nothing but character.
It's totally character
study. Nothing.
Maybe
but
the problem
character.
Was that we only reviewed movies that were shitty character
no,
studies.
No, they were good, because you eventually would end up agreeing to the conversation that you didn't you liked it. You would begrudgingly admit that you liked it.
No, here's the thing. You could think something is good but not like it. I disliked the original Rollerball movie, but I realize that it is a good film.
That's a weird choice, but okay.
Well, it's the best one I have at hand.
Yeah, I would say, like, I recognize that A Clockwork Orange is good, but I dislike it pretty intensely.
I actually somewhat feel the same way about Shawshank. I really think that it's a fantastic, like, it's one of the best movies ever made. but I do not find it enjoyable to watch in the slightest.
Because it's hard to watch.
It's so slow.
Well, it's also hard in a few places to watch.
Nah, that doesn't bother. I don't have any trigger warnings.
So that was my first thought. Second thought, I was disappointed in the end.
I was not disappointed in the end.
I thought there could have been more to the end.
How so? Like it needed to be wrapped up?
So the problem I have, I kind of had the same problem with the end of this that I had with the end of the first season of American Horror Story, in that you've told me from the beginning that I'm getting a limited number of episodes. There's no question that this is the story you're going to tell, and when you're done with the story.
Mm-hmm.
Fine.
Yeah.
That's great. Without having an ongoing series, it didn't feel like, it felt like they could have, the stakes could have been higher at the end.
Hmm.
I feel like some of the stuff they had happen through the course of the story were more traumatic and character changing than the ending was. The ending felt anticlimactic considering some of the other things that happened through the course of the story.
How do you think it would have changed for you had one or both of them died at the end?
I would have enjoyed it far more. Huh. I would have enjoyed the ending far more.
Huh.
Being that it was a limited series, there's no reason you can't do that. There's no reason you can't. And I like when storytellers don't have a problem with that. It felt like there was just, they didn't want to go there.
I got the opposite impression.
Really?
I thought that I expected them to kill one of them.
I did too, and I thought it was a bold choice that neither of them died, because... Because
I expected them to kill Woody Harrelson.
I thought they were going to kill Rusty.
Yeah. Leaving Woody alive would have been more interesting to that character. Killing McConaughey. Because I think with the path that Woody's character takes, and seeing that, you know, he's lost a lot. Where McConaughey, he's lost a lot, but he doesn't care about it as much.
Well, no, he did all his losing before the story even starts.
Well, yeah.
So he's already starting from the bottom and just kind of digging.
And he's at peace with the way, however anything's going to come out.
Right.
He's got his life. He's got, you know, as long as he has his beer, you know, and he's fine.
So all the things that you were saying about how you feel about the ending are why I like the ending. So they present to you this story that is at its heart an incredibly low stake, simple story.
Yes.
Like, there is not a lot of complication to the story.
No.
They thought it was one guy. There was a cover up. Then they came back a couple years later and then they got the guy.
Yeah, it was.
Like, there's not much more to it than that.
It was a very mediocre episode of, like, Cold Case.
Yeah.
It was like, it was a little bit of Law and Order, a little bit of Cold Case, and mediocre at best for what they were doing in the story they were telling.
Right. So the story itself, I found, all right, so this is simple procedural crime drama, whatever.
Which I appreciate them making that choice, because it doesn't detract from what they were trying to do and present these two interesting characters.
Right. So the method of their storytelling with the flashbacks, so you're seeing the past and the present kind of side by side, was pulled off fantastically. Like, mm-hmm. the way they age Woody and McConaughey, like...
Well, actually three time periods, because they...
Yeah, there was a third time period.
95, 2002, and then 2012. Mm-hmm. So they have
three storylines
going on.
You only see the 95 and the 2012... through, like, the first half of the series.
Yeah.
It's not until the last half, I think, that you start, they reference 2002. They reference the breakup, the divorce.
Yeah.
But they don't go into the detail of that until later, which it makes sense. Fine.
Well, and that's the thing that it happened when I rewatched it, is I noticed how referential they are, because they go back and they reference a lot of these events. They pre-reference them, and I caught up on all of those, which I totally didn't catch the first time around.
I actually love that kind of storytelling in books. Like, when it is obvious that the narrator is telling you a story from a meta perspective, he knows he's telling you a story,
mm-hmm.
and then they throw in things like that, like, and for the rest of my time on Mars, blah, 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 this. I actually kind of dig that, which they did all throughout the... Like, one of the first things when he says, so you guys want to talk about what happened in the swamp? And then they're like, yeah, no, we'll get to
or
that.
Do you want to talk about the kids? No, we'll get back to that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I like stories within stories. If you can tell me short stories in the context of telling me a larger story, I'm in.
Right.
And I really did dig that. And they were, and this was even a little more subtle about it, because they stayed with the person telling the story just long enough that you're getting the perspective of the storyteller and not just seeing the story. Mm-hmm. Like sometimes they say, let me tell you a tale.
Yeah.
And then the flashback waves come through and then you just see the movie.
Yeah. So I think the story itself is very simple, mm-hmm. but the embellishments that they put on the storytelling, the acting, and they don't spell a lot out for you. Like there's a scene right before they leave to go find the dude at the end where he goes and visits his wife.
Mm-hmm.
And he never says anything about it, but the entire scene is, man, Woody, is this your goodbye because you're going off to die? And like, he's like uncomfortably sitting on the couch because he doesn't know how to say that. And then he just leaves and doesn't say it.
Yeah.
He doesn't say anything.
Right.
Like, and that scene is fantastic. He doesn't need to say anything because it's like the entire scene just oozes the I'm going to my deathness.
This, I don't think this show would have worked with lesser actors. There's these two, and these two, and these two are amazing.
Yeah.
They really are great.
Right now, both these guys are kind of at the height of their career.
Yeah. They've both done some fantastic work in the past, but right now, they really both seem to be in their sweet spot.
Yep.
Not in Eric's sweet spot.
Not in Eric's sweet spot. But man, like, the scenes with them in the car, where they're just talking to each other, are all fantastic. And you know, like, I don't know if it was written to be funny. I feel like it wasn't written to be funny.
No, I think that it was. I think that it was. And I think that that was deliberate, but it was. It's another one of those situations where you can't give that to lesser actors because it would have either not, it would have turned out cheesy or it wouldn't have been handled the right way. But like, there are just certainly these really just darkly tragic little moments throughout that are, that just make it so worth it.
Yeah, those funny bits, like, If you go into the multiverse and see this where it was like Ben Affleck and fucking Nathan Fillion, where they're just like hamming it up and cheese balling it out, and you know, and I mean, you could just see where that would have been a totally, like, they would have been playing it for yucks.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
just ham fisting it all over the place, where these two, it was amusing because it was so dark.
It was dark, but it was like comfortable dark.
Yeah.
Like, you've been in that car ride with your buddy who, I don't know, like, he's, I don't know, smoked a bunch of weed that night, or he's drunk and he's like staring out the window, just talking like nonstop depressing shit. Man, can we just turn this car into a zone of quiet contemplation? Like, just stop it. This town's like a memory that people have forgotten what it was supposed to be. Can you stop saying shit like that, please?
There have
all
been
of those
some,
scenes were so good.
Yeah.
There have been some sausage fests about 2 a.m. that I've had conversations.
Yeah.
You need to go back to your room now.
Go to bed.
Here's a bottle of water.
Yeah.
Go take a walk.
Go be happy.
These are not the times to be happy, man.
I am not your Billadama. Keep walking.
Get out of here. So, I mean, like, the interaction between those two was just fantastic. And it was that they kept, I guess this is more a testament to the writing, but also to their delivery, that they kept the natural evolution of that relationship all the way to the hospital scene.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
In the end. They kept it consistent, and to me it was perfect. Like, every bit of that was flawless.
Yeah.
Like, when they hated each other, when they didn't hate each other, like, when he shows in that video and Woody Harrelson, like, finally realizes that he can't just make Matthew McConaughey go away, like, that, that was fantastic.
Mm-hmm.
That resignation.
And I really liked how they portrayed the dissolving of the relationship between Woody Harrelson and his wife. I really dug that. Like, I liked every bit of that, as uncomfortable as it was, because, like, you can see where it's like, okay, here's where she's going to be suspicious at all these stupid things that he's doing, it almost looks like he's trying to get caught.
Yeah.
And then his relationship with his girlfriend, where She's like, hey, I'm going to go out on a date. Well, you can't do that. Why not?
He had some serious problems.
He did. Yeah, he did. But they stayed consistent with that. And I thought that was well done. And kudos for Woody Harrelson for doing that. Like, for committing to that role. Because he did it well in such a way that, like, some actors wouldn't be like, I'm not playing this asshole. He's dumb. He does some dumb things. But he owned it. I mean, it was, I liked that. That was great.
I was really happy that you got that one scene of him just eating that TV dinner on the couch all alone.
Yeah.
Yep.
To me, that was fantastic.
Look what you have wrought.
Right.
I still
go
out. So this, like I kind of was talking about the embellishments.
Yeah.
So this is loosely associated with a book called The King in Yellow, which is a collection of short stories that's like, they're not Cthulhu-y, but they're kind of Cthulhu-y.
In what way?
So the book is actually written in a similar style that the show is shot. So it's a story within a story. It's actually a collection of short stories about a book. So The King in Yellow is a play in the story.
Okay.
And if you read The King in Yellow, it makes you go crazy. And you start hallucinating. And like you get teleported to this demon dimension. And all this like bad shit happens to you.
So it's like Monty Python's funniest joke ever written.
Kind of.
It's exactly like that.
So like there are little references to it all throughout the show.
They flat out call out the book at
they
one
do
point.
Call out the book yeah. at one point, and the like that's where Carcosa comes from. It's a like the palace kingdom thing. So I read it and it is not good. It's just old. That's what I got on this. Melina told me that it was not no one would be able to review this show without having read the book. So I read the book and I could tell you that you do not need to read the book.
So I didn't think I would need to.
You don't.
Yeah.
I pretty much got what I needed to from...
I mean, I suppose if you really, really are devoted to the reference material, but...
But this is something I think the show did well, is that beyond their simple story, they also hinted that there was something else going on. Like, with all the cultiness surrounding the murders, with, I don't know, the scenes where Rust starts to hallucinate and then sees into the universe...
Yeah, although they did at one point explain that he had...
Oh, yeah.
He had done so many drugs.
Well, no, he also explains that he has synesthesia, which I think is fascinating, because I've always wanted to meet an actual synesthetic, which is a person who can... whose senses are melded in their brain such that they experience some senses with other senses. So, you know, it would be like a person who can taste music or... smell, color, and there's like a small population of people who have synesthesia. And so at one point they explain that he has synesthesia, which I presume was not caused by his drug use. It's probably something he's had all his life, which would explain a lot of things about him. On top of that, the drug use, which causes the lingering hallucinations, which it's, and that's the other thing that I really loved is how much he lies to those two detectives during that interview. And you just sort of kind of build up the lies because it's, I noticed even more than the second time than I did the first time.
Yeah. Well, when they're narrating and the, like what's actually happening on screen is not it's what they're
right, really right, different. Exactly.
Like, that's fantastic.
Yeah.
And that is gorgeous.
That was one of the lies he told was he said he doesn't have these hallucinations anymore. But then later he says, yeah, of course, I have them all the time. So, yeah, I thought that was interesting. What do you guys think about the fact that it was kind of a horror movie in a certain way? Because there was really, really horrific shit going on sometimes. Not all the time, but...
I was okay with that.
I mean, it was enough that it's like you couldn't... You wouldn't have been able to put a show like this on Fox or NBC, and if you did, you would have ruined it.
I needed naked chicks in the show. Actually, really didn't need naked chicks in the show.
There weren't even really.
There were a couple chicks that Woody Harrelson was banging naked.
Oh yeah,
trust me, I didn't jive.
But even so, yeah. Creative camera angles, you could have still gotten the gist of those scenes without seeing nip.
Right, or put underwear on them. You could have shown that on network TV.
Yeah, so I actually didn't need that, but I did need them to say fuck a lot.
Yeah.
Well, there was one episode that was one of the most tense episodes that I'd seen in forever. It's the episode where they go to that drug dealer's house Matthew McConaughey goes there with those dudes and they steal the drugs. Like that entire, it's like 10 minute sequence where like, they go in and it's like one continuous shot and he's like running through the neighborhood trying to get away from the cops. And I was like, this is one of the most tense things I've watched on television in a long time.
That was good.
Like I closed my laptop and I'm actually like focused on the show.
Yeah, I did. I kind of did the same thing. I was watching. I was like, and I was like playing around my tablet. I can't follow this. I put it down. I rewound it. To go back and watch it because it's like I need to.
Yeah, I gotta watch this.
I'm not tracking what's going on. It's pretty intense.
I always love a good when somebody does a nice Alfonso Cuarón attempt, and that was I was really really super impressed that they tried it and then were able to pull it off.
I was down for that, man.
That whole episode of him just like. Oh, where they go, they've got the guy in the closet, and then he's like, here, take this. And he's like, what's in it? Oh, you'll find out. So he takes the drug that he doesn't know what he's taking, and ugh.
God damn it. When they interrogate that dude after the boat, he's like, I got a sniper rifle trained on you right now. Get out of here. You don't have shit trained on me. Do I look like a man who needs to lie to you?
Right. And they destroy that Maserati. Which is so fantastic. And then they take his cell phone. It's even better.
Oh, the dialogue was fantastic.
The writing throughout was
very solid.
Was really good.
And this is why I don't really want a season. Like, this 8 episodes to me feels utterly complete, and I'm completely fine with the way it ended.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Like, to me, the relationship that they have at the end, like, that old married couple at the hospital, to me, is the best ending.
Yeah.
I would have liked to have seen a different ending, but I am satisfied with the ending that was presented, because that was the ending. That was the story they wanted to tell. And it's done. I never want to revisit those characters. Because
I'm finished there.
I don't see a need to see those characters anymore. Their story is done.
Unless I start doing butt stuff, because I've watched that.
That's fair.
Who wouldn't?
I know. Everybody. This is next award.
It's the butt stuff award?
The butt stuff. Best butt stuff in the season 2.
Butt stuff prize, BSP.
Oh, no. Now I need to make a trophy. Speaking of fantasy football this year, you're in.
I have no clue about football. I honestly don't. I'll try.
It doesn't matter.
You ever worked with a spreadsheet before?
Yeah.
Can you sort a column in a spreadsheet?
I can do these things.
All right, because one of the columns is projected points. You just sort by projected points descending. You
start picking out from the top.
Use those guys.
I can probably do this.
$25 in, and then we're going to get trophy. Trophy's going to be a guy in a full football uniform in a recliner.
Nice. That is brilliant.
That is classy with a K. So here's my question to you. If you were disappointed with the ending, how did you feel about the way that the, what was the guy's name? Childress? The guy with scars on his face. How did you feel about how that wrapped up? Was that disappointing to you?
It didn't matter. I didn't care.
This is how I felt. Because to me, it was never really about this guy.
That wasn't what it was about. It was about those two guys, and I just felt, I don't know. It seemed like there could have been. I think what I wanted and what I could have seen done differently is that what was the end of the series about 45 minutes in where they end up at the hospital. Mm-hmm. That's actually the end of episode 7, and one of them's dead, and the last episode is dealing with the repercussions of that one being dead and what it means to that person and the people that are left.
I think almost starting a new story though.
I think that's maybe, but that's the thing is that those are the kind of stories that I like. The dealing with the repercussions of loss and of change, because we see that there's a change, and we get a hint of what it could be like, but if it's something more permanent where it's just these two guys are okay, they're just going to persist and they've got their status quo of being who they are, that's fine. But if you have something that's as life altering as permanent disability or death or something like that. I want to see the reaction to that.
Mm. That's, well, but that's me. That's but what about...
But that's me. That I mean, final, that's what I want to see.
So that final scene where they're outside of the hospital and then Matthew McConaughey starts talking. He has that moment where he's talking about kind of what you presume to be is making the choice. So, like, you know, he's talking about maybe having the choice to just go ahead and die. And he felt his daughter there, you know, that would be the easy choice. But then he felt like he had to come back. And so he has that really super emotional moment. You don't feel like that kind of offered some closure on the whole thing. Like, you know, this guy is miserable and maybe there's this belief that he could have had the choice. You know, he could have had the choice to just go ahead and die, but he didn't. Because he sort of felt like there was some value in staying alive. I mean, that's kind of the way that I took it.
No, I would have rather. I think at that point, now that I think about that, I would have rather seen Woody die and have him having to deal with that he had the choice and he chose to live, but that Woody didn't have the choice and he's not there. And man, that fucking bastard's lucky because I had to choose and explore that, unpack that. And I don't know in what context you do that in the terms of a TV series, because unless you're having him sit with a therapist for 45 minutes talking his shit out, you're not going to get that without just heavy exposition. But that's the kind of stuff that I like.
So I think that lasts in the hospital to me.
But the story that they were telling tells the story that they wanted to tell, and it's a great story.
It's satisfying because. And this is one of the things that I normally despise in media, is when a character says that they do not believe in God, immediately that they will have to in some way have some connection to something that they cannot explain, and that turns into, well, maybe there is a God.
Yeah.
Come on. Seriously?
Yeah.
It's time to grow up. So normally that kind of shit really annoys me, but I was fine with it in this. Like, Bones is a big offender of this. Can't stand when Bones does that.
I don't watch that show, so
you're not missing out. Just like, I can't figure out the show has an agenda, but I don't know what it is.
To mess with your head.
It's confusing. That's what it is. So his acceptance, so for me, Matthew McConaughey's acceptance that, hey, maybe shit isn't as bad as I think it is, because we did something decent here, and maybe what I felt when I was dead is that peace that I have not yet found having been alive and doing this thing has brought me closer to that. So I was fine with all that shit. For Woody is a terrible person, but he is the hero that I think that real life is, because we do not have superheroes. Everybody is goddamn terrible, but occasionally they do good things. And Woody Harrelson actually does this pretty frequently, where he's continuously a shitbag, but when the need is there, like he never once is cowardly about doing the right thing when it's a big thing, but can never seem to do the right thing when it is an endless series of like little wrongs.
Right. So that moment when he shoots the guy in the head. So they're in the swamp. He shoots the guy in the head. Do you think at that point that was kind of like a hero moment for him? Because that whole sequence made me feel really, really conflicted. Which I liked. And
I do not.
I might be a terrible person, but I was not conflicted in that moment.
That guy needed to die.
I think he needed to go. But
well, I mean, I'm not going to say that there wasn't deep sympathy with how they handled the situation, which is, so he comes out, he immediately shoots the guy in the head, and then it's like, you give it a 2-second pause, and then it's like, okay, we gotta fix this.
That was fantastic.
Yeah.
Take the cuffs off, we're gonna start firing, you know, we gotta create all this evidence.
Yeah, like, that was a fantastic buddy cop moment.
I've made my decision.
Yeah, and that's
whether you agree with it or not, we now have to fix it.
Yeah. Yeah,
this has happened. Let us deal with
it. It's done.
Yeah.
There's no going back from this. So now we just have to commit to it.
Yeah, and you know what? I really enjoyed that we did not belabor the discussion for 7 minutes. Okay, let's fix this. Fantastic.
Yeah. Right, exactly.
We can argue about it on the car driving the fuck out of here.
Yeah, fantastic.
Right.
So, You're right. I was conflicted in that moment, too, because I understand where Woody's a man who cannot handle his emotions.
Yeah.
Yeah.
He clearly.
Is he id then? Because he was id, and then what's-his-face was his ego, and somebody else was a superego. This whole thing worked out when I actually watched the show 2 months ago. Because they were both like broken halves of the same person.
Oh, yeah.
Which is why I really dug the end.
There should have been more spooning at the end.
Yeah, I wish there was.
Yeah.
But he did kind of... Is this a wedding ring? This was a proposal. I would have gotten you a nicer box.
So some of the dialogue, there's some really, really memorable stuff that gets said through the course of it. I can't remember the exact phrasing.
Is it your favorite one?
It's your favorite one.
Yeah, it is. It's a man's game charges a man's price.
Yeah.
Right when he's about to beat the shit out of those guys.
Exactly.
That was fantastic.
Yeah.
Putting on the gloves.
Yeah. Oh, look, the door is unlocked.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You guys can either come out of here, take it like a man, or I'm coming in there.
And the one where McConaughey says something about having the smell of pussy on him.
Oh, yeah.
Which was, it was great because, like, the way he did it, and he's like, what are you saying? What do you know?
Just yeah, what are you saying about?
Just jumped down his throat. He's like, hey, I'm not the one who came in wearing the same clothes.
Yeah.
Come on.
That was what the moment I laughed the absolute hardest was that moment where the new girlfriend calls him and then it just smash cut to the next day and he looks like hell and he's wearing the exact same suit and like his collar is wrinkled and it's like, oh God. Oh yeah. Well, that made me laugh.
So the opening song is Luke.
Yeah.
Like, everything about that song is Luke. That slow, southern drawling.
Yeah, I was listening to that thinking, how long until we're covering this?
Yeah. Ooh.
And I liked the imagery in the opening sequence, too. It was full of, there was like, a sequence of difficult choices and images within images. It was That was solid. I liked it because it did hint at there being more to the story and to the world.
Yeah.
And in the end, I was almost a little bit disappointed that there wasn't some supernatural element to it in the end. It's like, I'm glad there wasn't, because it would have been cheesy.
I would not have liked that at all.
But
had there been
another part of me was like, I would have had a problem with it.
Well, the opening sequence actually kind of reminds me of the opening sequence to True Blood, which is
stop it.
Not Never. A good show. No, it's a great opening.
It is a great opening.
And I'm not saying
fantastic.
Yeah, exactly.
True Blood is just terrible.
I've never seen the opening or heard the song.
Oh, I mean, the opening is really great. And
the opening is pretty good.
It builds the promise of a show that it is not, but the opening sequence is fantastic because it's all this kind of, you know, crazy
death
and decay imagery.
Southern.
Yeah, but
crazy.
Also with the sort of southern gothic feel, because it also takes place in Louisiana.
A bunch of kids are eating strawberries, and so they've got strawberry all over the face, which just looks like they've been eating blood. It's pretty
nice.
Good.
Yeah. And that was the other thing that I thought was really interesting.
It's almost as good as the Dexter opening.
Also really solid.
Dexter opening is fantastic.
Seen that one either.
Solid opening.
So it's, you know, the premise of the show is Dexter's a serial killer.
Right.
Well, the opening is him getting ready in the morning, and everything that he does
is serial killer.
Is serial
imagery.
Killery. But then they show a little bit more, like he's got this garrote, and then he pulls it, and then he's flossing.
He's flossing. Or like he's cutting into pink flesh, but it's his steak that he's cooking.
Nice.
For the morning. Or he's squeezing blood oranges for his breakfast.
it's pretty good.
Yeah.
That is good.
God damn that opening. I was trying to look up some awesome quotes, but IMDb is a failure.
IMDb is better about quoting movies than TV shows.
Yeah, I guess.
The dialogue is really solid, though.
Yeah. And I read about, and I, again, this was forever ago, the guy who wrote it what is his name, Nick Pizzolatto.
Yeah,
his
I
only
think that's right.
Only written novels. Mm-hmm. He's a novelist, so he's never written a TV show. I sort of suspect that's probably why.
I would have read this novel. Really good. This is a good novel.
I think you can read this novel.
Is it a thing?
I think so.
Well, Sean said he got the audiobook of one of his novels, and he said it was very similar. So,
mm-hmm. Is there butt stuff? How is that not your first question?
Is there butt stuff?
Yeah.
Because that's my first question.
Pretty much everything.
That is his first question, yeah.
It was my first question.
Yeah, whenever I go to my department meetings, we're talking about business plans.
Is there
going to
be butt stuff? Because if not, I think we need to punch up.
If there's no butt stuff, I'm moving.
We need to punch up the butt stuff. It would make our business plan sing.
Horrific.
Tony, the world needs bad men. We keep the other bad men from the door.
That is a quote very similar to the men on the wall speech in A Few Good Men.
Mm. We're I the like men. When people realize that their heroes are shitty people, too. Maybe that's because I'm cynical. The newspapers are going to be tough on you, and prison is very, very hard on people who are kids. If you get the opportunity, you should kill yourself.
Oh, God.
Death created time to grow the things that it would kill.
That's good. That is really so good. Some of the stuff kind of makes you think the guy who wrote this was a goth when he was a kid. Like he was a 16-year-old, and he kept all his notebooks of crap like that he wrote down.
Fuck this. Fuck this world. Nice hook, Marty.
That was good. That was good.
Oh, man. Everything about these are just fantastic. So not only did this give me a lot of Southern drawl good quotes, but it also gave me the True Detective meme that was just shots of Woody Harrelson looking confused at something Matthew McConaughey said, and then people writing in whatever they were going to write in underneath it.
Right.
What I liked also was how Matthew McConaughey seemed to have a code about himself, like of what he expected of himself, but that didn't include not lying to save people's feelings, which I just thought was really interesting. He seems to be like this, like he's like this, he's got like this idea that he's like a samurai or a, you know, he's got this thing about him where he's going to do things his way because that's the way of the world. But when it comes to Woody's wife sleeping with him, he takes the hit. You know, he's like, you slept with my wife, punch him in the face. He doesn't say, hey, look, she came to me. Not right away.
Yeah, but I think he's being kind of realistic in that moment in that he knows there's nothing that he could say that would get him out of that situation. Because if Woody Harrelson is bringing it up, obviously his wife told him.
Right.
So I think he realizes, like, one of the things I think is so fascinating about him is that he understands he sort of understands the human condition better than anybody else. So he knows at that moment there is absolutely nothing else he could say. So therefore he's not going to bother to make excuses or.
It's also interesting because Woody does that thing where he attacks the wrong problem. Like he always focuses on the wrong thing.
Yeah, but he does that consistently.
I mean, he does. Yeah, it's consistently throughout.
Well, the problem is that he has no capacity for self-examination, and Matthew McConaughey only has capacity.
That's all he does, yeah.
So, it's difficult to convince somebody that they need to examine themselves, because if that's not already apparent, you cannot convince somebody of that.
Right. And he doesn't try to defend himself, because defending himself really doesn't do any good, because
nice up, Marty.
I'm not... What did I do wrong? Your wife slept with me. I'm a single guy. That's an argument he could have made. It would have fallen on deaf ears and probably would just get the shit kicked out of him even more. Because at that point, Woody would have been defending his wife, who clearly went to cheat on him.
Well,
but that's
I also
not the
think
way he sees it.
He's got a really overdeveloped sense of morality as well. Because,
yeah.
I mean, the whole series is about him wanting to continue to pay this debt, which he mentioned several times. It's like, I have this debt that needs to be paid. So to him... the moral choice would be A, owning up to what he did, and then B, not making excuses about it or not trying to explain it away, because then that wouldn't be the moral choice.
But at the same time, I don't think he sees himself at fault.
Yeah, not I think he does, because he immediately feels guilty about it, and he, like, immediately throws her out of his house. So...
Well, he does that, but I don't think I'm explaining myself right. Because I don't see that... I don't see that Woody's attack on him, he's not defending himself, because I don't think he sees it as what he did is wrong. Mm. Which I think I just said the same thing two different ways.
I think he knows that's why he doesn't defend himself. Because he generally doesn't take shit from anybody. Like, if that had been anybody else, he would have beat the shit out of him.
But he takes a lot of shit from Woody.
Yeah.
He does take a lot of shit from Woody that he doesn't take from anybody else.
He does take a lot of shit from Woody, but... Like, at the times that he takes that shit from Woody, I feel like that relationship has developed. Like, they have an understanding pretty early on that Woody understands that this dude's fucking broken. And Matthew McConaughey understands everything Woody Harrelson is pretty much from the outset.
Yeah.
And he understands that Woody Harrelson's is a shitbag, but he's also a shitbag who will go the places Matthew McConaughey will go. Like when Woody Harrelson shoots that dude in the swamp, like Matthew McConaughey is on board with that shit.
Yeah.
The only reason he is not on board with that shit is we could have used that guy to find other people, other people we were looking for. But like, no hesitation in that cover up.
Right.
Right.
None whatsoever. Like, he is on board.
Well, I think that his sense of morality is such that he doesn't. It's not like he's not going to do bad things, because he very clearly makes choices to do bad things pretty consistently, or immoral things, I think he's got this sense of justice of, like, you know, ultimately he's accumulating debts that will have to be paid later. So it's not like his sense of morality is going to keep him from doing the bad shit that he does.
So what you're saying is that this is a remake of My Name is Earl.
Don't start with.
Think about it.
I don't think so.
There's just no paper list.
You don't keep a running list in your head? I do.
What I'm saying is that Earl kept a physical list, but McConaughey doesn't.
Yeah,
but he's racking up his debts.
Yeah, you know.
He's already racked up his debts.
Well, he's working them off, but he accumulates more in the process too.
Yeah.
Just like Earl did. Earl had to add some things to the list before he was done taking them off.
Nobody's a good person, Tony. Everybody's shitty. Occasionally they do good things.
Speaking of shitty people.
I'm right here, Tony.
it's the shitty person notification. there's a new app that I've been made aware of. Actually, I was made aware of it a while ago, but it wasn't available for Android until about a week ago.
Okay.
Secret. It was an iOS app.
Oh, yeah.
Only previously.
Yeah.
So it's this... anonymous social experiment where you sign up for an account, you can have friends, you don't know who those friends are, you don't know, unless they tell you that they've signed up for it, then you know that you have a friend on it, and you know that friend is on it, but you don't know that they're posting secrets. You know that if you have at least 5 friends that you, then when you see a secret, you'll know if it's from a friend of yours, or from a friend of a friend, or if it's just some random jackhole. But, like, it doesn't tell you who is posting stuff. You can post with an avatar, but you can also change that avatar at will, so you don't have to use the same avatar all the time to keep things random, to keep things from making yourself obvious, and to pointing out to the world who you are. You post secrets anonymously.
So, yeah, I don't feel like this is new or
this
different
sounds
from
like...
post-secret.
Yeah,
I don't know what that is.
It's not the same.
Well, that's
thing,
the oh yeah, I have seen
for
that
by mail.
Yeah,
this also feels like I'm sure both of you know the fantastic movie Mean Girls.
Yeah,
yeah,
it's Burn Book essentially.
Yeah,
that's what it is.
Man, Mean Girls was really good.
It was really good.
Tina Fey is so goddamn hot.
That's true. Amy Schumer. I've been watching her show.
It's
watched
fantastic.
I've watched a couple episodes.
We are going to Tennessee to see her in September.
It's
because somebody's trivia night made me miss her when she came to St. Louis.
It's mostly good. There are parts of it that are not
You're right.
great.
There are some
of the sketches are not good.
I'm
just
curious
flat out
as
not
to which
good.
One, which ones you think are not good. Not that I'm disagreeing. I'm just curious.
I've only seen two episodes.
Yeah.
So I'm trying to think of which. Because I pretty much, it's like most sketch comedies. I don't retain sketches unless they're outstandingly funny. And I remember those. Like the sketch where it was the bachelorette party. And they were giving gifts of dildos and vibrators. Mm-hmm. And it was like they were all one-upping each other what their vibrators could do. I found that amusing. I was like, okay, this is good. I'm glad I watched this at
once. Was this yesterday, Tony?
It was no, on this is a, like a week or two one. Ago. All right,
good.
It's a season one episode.
It was from yesterday, and I haven't seen it yet.
I haven't seen it yesterday's episode.
It's a dry commentary on the vibrator arms race that's currently going on.
It was pretty funny.
Yeah.
Mine has Wi-Fi.
That's pretty good.
So it's got Bluetooth. You can listen to music. That was pretty good. There was an episode. There was the beginning of an episode where she's her boyfriend is on his laptop and says something about honesty or faithfulness, and he walks away, and she hacks in. She's looking at his search history, and it's all this shit like, how do I tell her that I'm secretly rich, and how do I, how can she be so beautiful first thing in the morning, and I'm like just all this
Asian girls,
Asian girls, it's like half loaded, and you just see these faces of it. Oh sure, it's Asian girls.
I knew it,
and the rest of it loads, and there's like, you've made $1,000 donation in Amy's name to this group that protects that educates Asian women or in some third world country. But in the end, he's jerking off to
with a belt wrapped around his throat. So for me, those sketches fall in one of three categories. Category is it's really funny, or it's not as funny, but it's really clever. Mm. Have you seen the one where she's playing the army game?
Yes.
So she's playing she's like playing Halo or some like Call of Duty game. Well, she's going through the tutorial, and so like as she's playing, like she picks a female character, and then like she gets sexually assaulted by her commanding officer. And then she's like,
when do you start shooting? And then it goes to the horrors of trying to report a sexual assault in the army.
Like, well, do you want to report it? Yes. Are you sure?
Yes.
Yes.
Do you realize he has a family?
Like, that's not really funny, but it's really clever.
It is good.
I don't want to play this anymore.
I'm trying to think of which
one. And then the not funny ones. Yeah. Like, there was one where she did where it was like a game show for breaking up with her boyfriend. It was not good. Like they planned the breakup. That one was not as funny.
Her stand-up is good. Like the little stand-up bits in there are solid. I like those.
We're Dove. We're so awesome. Look at us. We're so nice. We'll put these fucking dump trucks on TV. It's fantastic.
It was funny because the first one I watched, it was obviously they're more primetime viewing, so it was edited. But if you tape like the one that airs at like 3 a.m., there's no edits. So like they don't bleep anything. Like,
really?
Yeah. Yeah. They flat out say fuck and everything.
Oh, yeah.
Huh.
Which I know Comedy Central has done that for a long time. They've used the FCC, what do you call it? The
guideline?
No, there's a term for the hours that that they actually lift.
You're talking about watershed, or at least that's what they call it in the UK.
Maybe.
We're not in the UK.
In the UK, after 10 o'clock, you can put anything on television. Yeah. They don't care.
Yeah, which
butts?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Especially butts.
But the
SNL
thing is,
SNL used to push that boundary a little bit.
Well, but SNL is different because it's on broadcast television, technically.
But even broadcast television.
The FCC has no jurisdiction over cable television. The only reason they do that is, you know, fear. But
right.
The FCC can't find Comedy Central because they say shit at 3 p.m.
Right.
You know, there's no power to do that.
No, but they have, because they're basic cable, because they're not a premium station, they have a, I don't know, I feel like they have like an unspoken
Listen, they have a problem with sure. It's a bundling thing.
Yeah.
Sure.
They don't
want
to get dropped from the cable provider because they right. die. So I'm sure there's an unspoken
you don't want to piss off
eyes with anybody across a circle from you. Wait, what are we talking about?
I'm not sure. I was talking about Comedy Central. You're all of a sudden double Dutch running over there. I'm not really sure.
Do you want to know how much of an 11-year-old boy I am? So, John Carter was written in like 1915 or 1920. Mm. So, at some point, they go somewhere, and he's traveling for a long time, and then he's tired. And he's like, and we were very fagged out, so we went to bed. Come on.
Yeah, my boss said the word duty in a team meeting once, and I lost my shit.
Do you not realize what you just said? I really like the show. I am looking forward to seeing what a second season looks like.
Wait, what?
We're back to True Detective, I assume.
Oh, all right. Let's say Amy Schumer's in her second season.
Yeah, are they replacing
it? I've only seen three episodes. Well, two episodes that we've recorded.
Oh, I'm going to see her live. I'm going to see her live from the front row. It's going to be hot. That chick is hot. Funny chicks are hot. Tony.
She's very attractive.
Tony.
Because she's so funny. Tony. Though Julie pointed out that she's got a very small mouth, and now I can't stop looking at that.
Just makes you feel huge, Tony.
It's true.
It's true. I can't get it in my mouth. Okay.
Seems like you're not committed to this. Yeah. See, it's bugging me now to think of one of the sketches that was less than stellar.
You see that sketch where she got herpes?
Oh, with Paul Giamatti?
Paul Giamatti's
gone. Yeah.
That
yeah.
was fantastic.
Oh, that one's all right, I'm calling so him. Good.
Boop, 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 boop. I'm God. Fine, I'll just call him for you.
That one started off slow. That one was like, this isn't funny. And then when he called as her, it's like, all right, this got better. This got worth it.
Mm-hmm. I thought you were calling him, but in fact, you're ordering a pizza.
Yeah, I was surprised that they have. I noticed it first with it was somebody else I saw. It was the guy from Castle. Was
the guy
the
from Castle. Oh,
what's his name? Esposito. You ever watch Castle?
No, that show's terrible.
My mom likes that show.
So one of the partners. I do. I'm not ashamed of it.
Tony
I kind of
is your mom.
I don't. You know what? It's I don't weird. Have any guilty pleasures. That's stupid.
I
have things that I like.
And I'm going to make fun of you regardless. That's fine. So it might as well be about this.
Are you?
Okay.
Are you my
it's,
mom?
It's topical.
How do you feel about Jim Croce?
I don't know.
Anyway. Anyway.
But he was in it. The guy from the guy who just got killed off of The Good Wife was in an episode.
The Good Wife. Will.
Another show my mom really loves.
I don't watch that one. Julie does.
Sure. Real quick to say that.
I watched an episode of it. I was like, this is dumb. I'm out. I don't understand how this can be a show. Kind of like, there's a lot of shows that I don't understand how they can still be shows. Like, Revenge. Can't she just fucking get revenge on these people yet?
Killing people, despite what they tell you, killing people is actually pretty easy. Yeah. Like, it's pretty easy to kill people.
Getting away with it's not always easy.
Well, what's your goal? Is your goal revenge or your goal getting away with murder? Because those are different things.
They are different things.
If I'm getting revenge on somebody, then... Oh, it needs to be a public spectacle, like a coliseum or something.
Mm, lions.
Yeah, Tony, are you not entertained?
Yeah.
There was a thought in there somewhere.
I don't know where I was going, but it was something about those actors.
I just found it interesting that she's able to get some of these actors to play bit parts on episodes of.
I assume it's probably just whomever
location.
Is in New York. Because I know I heard a story, and this is not at all funny, but she hired one of the writers on her show is Tig Notaro, who actually makes it into, I don't know if you saw the episode.
The cancer
Tig
episode?
Tig gets cancer.
Yeah, I did see that one.
Yeah. So
that was funny.
Oh, God. And Tig Notaro is one of my favorite comedians. She's so funny.
I'd never heard of her until that episode.
Yeah. She actually has, I'm going to recommend this to everybody. She has an album that she recorded. Yeah, all three of you.
I can't play albums currently.
It's digital. She made a comedy album the week after she was diagnosed with cancer, where she went on stage and it was entirely improvised. And she did like a 30 to 40 minute set about getting cancer. And it's unbelievably hilarious. Like, it's so tragic and so good. It's like one of the most amazing things. So, so Tig Notaro, where was I going with this? I was talking about Tig Notaro. I have
no idea. She hired Tig Notaro.
Right. Oh, yeah. So, so I heard an interview with her, and she was saying that when she actually found out she had cancer in Los Angeles, right as she was about to move to New York to do Inside Amy Schumer. So I think the way that they get, I think basically what they do is they just call around and whomever is in New York that week.
Which is pretty typical. Actually, that's how a lot of people ended up on Law and Order.
Right.
And stuff like that. Yeah.
Like, who's in New York this week? Because, yeah, apparently all every bit player in the union will at some point end up in Law and Order just because they got to go through so many people. You know, corpses don't play themselves.
I actually saw he posted on Facebook, probably Twitter also, T posted the clip that he was in Homicide. Because he was actually in Homicide.
Is that a show?
Yeah, it was. Homicide, Life on the Street.
Mm. That's the one with Andre Brower, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
It was a...
The guy that did... Wasn't
it a predecessor to...
The Wire. Because the guy that did The Wire didn't... He also did Homicide. Yeah.
But there was a direct connection between Homicide and... Wasn't it SVU? Because the Richard Belzer's character went from one to the other.
Was it Law and Order?
It was one of the Law and Orders. Richard Belzer, the comedian, went from... He was in Homicide as the same character that ended up going to...
I don't trust people with dark tinted glasses, Tony.
Interesting.
No sunglasses? Or just dark tinted?
Yeah, just all the time? Or yeah, what about when it's sunny?
Glasses.
What about when it's sunny?
No, sunglasses is different. I don't wear my sunglasses inside during normal circumstances.
Sometimes I do. Because I forgot my glasses. Just saying.
Well, that makes you a crazy person.
Clearly.
Also, your building is very well lit. It's difficult to escape the sun in that building.
Maybe it's just so she can watch you weave and breathe your storylines.
What is happening?
It's wearing sunglasses at night.
It's a reference.
Our older audience will get that reference.
But they won't.
Probably will.
Well, those people are probably dead.
No, we're roughly the same age and I got it, so.
Corey Hart.
Yeah.
I know what it is. You should feel ashamed.
I don't. I don't feel any shame. I don't feel one bit. Because I made you think of it.
I made a joke about that the other day, actually. I can't remember where we were going or what we were doing. I didn't laugh at it either. That's how I know it's not good. I try out all my best material on Melina first.
She seems like she'd be a good critic.
Yeah, because she is not afraid to tell me that I'm terrible.
Mm-hmm. I see that.
But she's incapable of doing it in a way that is not negging, so that's good, but you really do need to practice. All right. I actually don't have a good example of that. She does it to Katie all the time. And I'm like, that is a really mean thing to say. No, it wasn't. That actually looks nice on you. That's not really a compliment.
I'm surprised at how good you look in that.
Yeah. I feel like with a clever rearranging of words, this could be something nice you say to somebody instead of what it is.
I believe they call that a complicit.
I've never heard of that term.
It's definitely not an explain-a-brag.
I got nothing else.
Me neither. Tony, what else did I do this week?
I went to the Renaissance Festival.
That sounds terrible.
I enjoy it.
Did you get a turkey leg?
I did not, but what? I did get fried pickles.
Ew.
Yeah. That's less. That is not as.
I don't care for turkey.
It's not actually turkey. It's chicken. I like.
What?
It's chicken.
It's a big goddamn chicken.
It's chicken, isn't it?
No, it's turkey. Those are turkey. Is it actually legs. Turkey? They are actually turkey.
That doesn't seem right.
I don't know that they make chickens.
These things are this goddamn big.
Yeah, they grow up chicken that big now.
I think that's really the only thing of value at Renaissance festivals.
I think if we had more time, I probably would have got a henna tattoo, just because.
Well, like a henna dick. Like your spirit animal. we go to the Renaissance Fair. Oh, Tony. Man, I spent all weekend. I'm like, man, I really got to get this project done. I'm probably not going to do any work on this project, so I wasted like 3 days not doing anything.
Is that what you were working on Monday night? When you said you were in the hangout, said something about fuck work.
Yeah. No, Monday night I was like, man, I don't want to go to work tomorrow.
Oh.
We barbecued over at Luke's. I was all fat and barbecued out.
You missed a good conversation yesterday about terrible euphemisms for sex.
Oh, god damn it. I gotta turn that
terrible?
Hangout.
Yeah.
I gotta turn that hangout back on.
Yeah. Like what are some of the most terrible euphemisms
take
for sex?
Take the pigskin bust to Tuna Town.
It was very similar to that. There was one that was very similar to that.
Oh god. That is terrible.
No, that's a good.
Oh, let's see. I'll grab my phone because I don't feel like hauling that thing over here.
Well, you had it like halfway here already, though.
Yeah, except
you gotta commit, noise. Man. Commit.
The noise that thing will create just isn't working. Hey, there's a text. I'll be a few minutes late.
I was. I had to stop and get food.
I didn't see that.
One of our cats shit all over herself running away from Romeo.
That sucks.
Actually, I guess it's not entirely true. She shit in the closet, like, all over Melina's clothes.
Oh.
Trying to get away from Romeo. Oh. So we had to cut the poop out of her fur. Oh. So I'm going to be late. Because I'm cutting the poop out of my cat's fur.
Thanks for only having some of that information available.
You have kids. It's not news.
No, it's not. No, but I understand tactful editing.
Like the text?
Yeah. All right, so...
especially because I was driving.
So, Kane asks, what are the worst euphemisms for sex that you know of? Asking for reasons. Bump uglies for politicians, polling the electorate, doing the badonkadonk, getting up in them guts...
Up in them guts is fantastic. That's a good
The horizontal song. Mambo, yeah. Doing the nasty, getting lost in the Alps, getting some stank on your hang lows.
Oh, I love that one.
That guess who posted
that was
that
from
one?
Molina, yeah. Wasn't it? Yeah. I say that a lot.
Fade to black. Poking the whispering eye.
What?
Jesus Christ. Oh my god.
That might be the worst one.
Riding the Trans-Siberian Railway. That was James, who then posted, I may have misunderstood the question. Slip a sausage in the oven.
No.
Riding the bus to Tuna Town.
There it is.
Laying pipe. Plumbing the depths.
Mm.
Poking the rusty sheriff's badge. Playing hide the salami. Making a deposit in the sperm bank. Giving her a hot beef injection.
Hot beef injection's also good.
That was mine. Smashing in her porculus.
No.
Pounding carpets.
No.
Bothering the neighbors. Sharpening the pencil. Dipping the wick. Burying the bone. To which then the question gets asked, where is David in all of this?
Mm-hmm.
And the conversation died with that question.
Aww.
Getting the Mustang and hang loose is probably the best.
That's a good one.
I don't remember what show I got that from, but
is that a good one?
Yeah.
It's a good, terrible one, yeah. Mm-hmm. Considering the context of looking for bad euphemisms, I think that's a good bad euphemism.
I feel like there's a ton that were not on that list.
There, yeah.
This is not a game that I'm going to do well at.
Most of the things I would have said are already on that list. Hey, so here's some pro tips. One, do not see Pompeii.
Didn't plan on it.
Do not see Hercules.
Didn't plan on it.
And there was I watched Enemy with Jake Gyllenhaal.
I'm not sure what
Which
that is.
Which one is that one?
It's where he meets himself. He's a college professor, and he meets himself, who is an actor.
How was it?
Complex.
Was it worth my time?
I feel like we could have a very long discussion about it.
So, we should do this after X-Men?
It is a movie that could be reviewed.
All right. Is it on Netflix?
I did not see it on Redbox. Okay. I ended up having to rent it from iTunes.
I'm not opposed to renting things.
Or you could probably just order from Netflix with enough advance notice.
I don't have the disc service.
The disc service. Tony, what are you doing?
Well, between Netflix and Hulu and Amazon Prime, I typically can get most of the things that I want. I do see that it's nice that Amazon Prime now has some of the old HBO stuff. They've picked up the old HBO stuff.
Tony, you have an HBO Go.
I know. No.
You have all the HBO stuff.
No, I'm just saying that's a good thing for people who don't have that. It's nice to see that HBO is finally able to let some of their content get out there for people to see.
Wait, how old are we talking?
Like all of The Wire, all of Carnival, all of Sopranos, the first three seasons of True Blood.
Yeah. See, that's fairly, I mean, that's more, because I'm thinking like, are we talking like Arliss old? Or?
I think Arliss is on there.
Here's another pro tip. Don't bother watching True Blood.
I'm not going to.
No.
The chicks you want to see get naked, get killed. All the chicks that do get naked are Anna Paquin.
The piece of advice I would give, seeing as how that show is not good, however it appeals to ladies my age, apparently, because we can't. We all talk about how much we hate it, and yet we won't stop watching it.
No, I've watched it all. I know.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So.
He's a lady your age.
I'm a lady your age.
Yeah. Right. Exactly. I would recommend watching the first season only and just stopping there. Don't go any further. But watch the first season because the first season is pretty good.
If you want to see as much banging,
there's lots of banging in the first season.
Just watch Spartacus because the story is much better. And the banging is like in slow-mo, like Matrix-style slow-mo.
So it's like bullet time banging?
And there is a ton of dick. Like, there's more dick than naked chicks.
Wow.
Yeah, it's...
That's pretty fantastic.
Screen time.
Makes sense, considering that, well, if they're talking about gladiators, I don't know if a lot of them actually...
TV in this country, but that's well, how it's done.
I'm talking about...
Then you can see the pale orc.
True.
Pale orc's dick.
Wait a minute, that's the guy that's on Arrow.
Crixus. Manu Bennett,
yeah.
Manu Bennett.
Yeah, but I would never watch Arrow because it's terrible.
Who I saw Deathstroke from afar. He was here in St. Louis.
Oh, you went to Comic-Con?
Yeah.
If I had known he was here, I might.
I thought about getting a Spite autograph, but it wasn't enough money to make fair. That happen, so.
Here's the thing. I would not have minded if you got a Spite autograph, but the way to really get me is, hey, I got this autograph from Manu Bennett. While he was autographing it, I asked him why they CGI'd him as the white orc instead of just having him be the white orc. But I'm not going to tell you what his answer was. That would be the ultimate.
Yep. Spite information.
Yeah, that would.
Anything else about True Detective? Watch it.
Yeah.
If you have not,
highly recommended.
Watch it. It is worth your time.
God damn, I got that theme stuck in my head. How am I going to finish the last 47 seconds of John Carter?
You mean because you can't get the...
Yeah, I can't
get the music in...
It's fantastic.
So good. And I was right, it was T. Boone Burnett. He has a certain way of always picking the right songs. Don't know who T. Boone Burnett is? Famous, famous music producer. He did... he became really, really famous because he did the soundtrack to Oh Brother, Where Art Thou? He's also produced some albums that I really, really quite liked. I want to say he did like an album with the Black Keys, but I think I may be wrong about that. I know he definitely did one with Black Rebel Motorcycle Club, which was spectacular.
I'm going to make up words too.
It's band names.
Banana Lamp Face.
Probably a band somewhere that I think they do power pop. Anyway.
Bullshit.
So yeah, I'm just saying T-Bone Burnett did the music for the series and he did an excellent job as always. That was my final thought. I have no more.
I also have no less.
So next week else? I have to watch Godzilla.
You don't have to.
No, I mean I should.
Look, last time I didn't watch the movie and showed up.
The
I took off
first
my shirt, so you
outside date I ever went on was to see Matthew Broderick's Godzilla.
Gross.
With this guy named Derek.
You mean your Godzilla? How was Derek as a date?
Oh, it was awful.
Was it just because of the movie?
No, he was a terrible person.
So he liked it. He liked the movie? Is that what you said?
Probably.
This is pretty good, right?
Knowing this guy, he probably liked it. I think he's a bus driver now.
Nothing wrong with that.
True.
All right, I'm going to end the podcast with a secret. Game of Thrones is what I call it when I need to use the restroom at work and try to guess whether or not one of the stalls will be unoccupied.
Did you post that?
No.
Did I post that?
Probably.
I downloaded that app, but then I was like, wait, none of my friends have any interesting secrets, I bet.
They probably do, but they're not going to post them there. That's the problem, is it doesn't encourage the actual secrets that you want to hear are probably not being posted.
Whenever I open up to people, they say shit that makes me realize why I rarely open up to people.
That was not me. You'll know when it's me, Tony.
Like, I doubt anybody's going to that app to say, I have a crushingly awful Vicodin habit, or, you know, the stuff you really want to read.
Oh, no,
people.
I just say that. Dude.
Somebody actually posted, even though I cheat, I still lose my shit when I find out other people cheat on me.
Hmm. Sounds like Woody Harrelson's character.
I only pee in the sink when I'm at home. It's way more convenient. Don't knock it till you try it. Hmm. I poop when I text.
Who isn't using their phone when they're pooping?
Seriously.
Because you fucking come on.
It's dead time. Where are you going to waste time?
Yeah, what are you going to... It's like one of the few activities you do where you do not need to use your arms or your eyes for anything.
I think I'm a nymph. Is this okay? I only go after women, though.
Wait, nymph? Like a tree nymph?
I think they were missing the rest of us.
I eat lunch as quick as I can so I can spend the rest of my time napping in my car.
That makes a lot of sense. So that would be a better secret if it was so I can spend the rest of the time, I don't know, playing online poker or
banging a coworker.
Furiously
wondering how many bullet points with Biggie lyrics I can add to this corporate PowerPoint deck before anyone actually notices.
These just sound like tweets to me.
Yeah, a lot of them really just are tweets. Not even a great one.
That's a good one, though. I appreciate that one.
Tony, you'll know when it's me. A lot of women complain about my 18-inch penis. I'm in a fierce legal battle with El Monstero about them stealing the name of my penis for their band. I am the unofficial mascot of the Well Hungarians. This also just sound like tweets to me.
Every time I get bit by a spider, I secretly hope for superpowers. I'm in my 30s.
That's also not me. Could be.
That's not, yeah, that could.
Or you'll see something like, I lied to my friend's kid about what lantern color I was.
I noticed I still have glitter on my face from the weekend. I'm a 30-year-old male attorney and just came out of a 6-person meeting.
Oh.
There's one that's just eloping.
Alina, on Monday, you know how she and Luke like to jerk each other off about this fucking ghost hunting shit? Well, she was talking about how she went to get a psychic reading when she was at Stanley, and the guy mentioned her mom. He's like, there's no way he could have known that. Bullshit. I can find that your mom is dead really easily. With just my name? Yeah, have you ever been to the internet? You can't find that. Okay. 4 tabs. This is the exact pieces of information I used to get there. You knew what you were looking for. Well, yeah, but it's still findable.
Yeah, there's a video of people going into a room on the street where they're doing readings like that.
Yeah.
And they sit them down and they start doing the innocuous bullshit where it's like, I sense that you have experienced loss in the past with someone, seeing a J or a T.
I'm feeling male energy.
Yeah, yeah. So they start it that way. So it's like, it's total bullshit.
Yeah.
But what they do is they've got like a team of like 4 or 5 people on a curtain just behind the wall.
Yeah,
who they do facial recognition and they're Googling and using some of those sites where you can look up information about people. They get to a point where it's like, I can see the numbers, and they read off their bank account number and their address and all this other bullshit. And it's basically the video. It's a viral video for like a ID protection service or something, showing you just how easy it is to get this. And the only piece of information that they have about these people is their picture.
You can do picture searches.
Yeah.
It's pretty ridiculous.
It's pretty easy. And what's crazy is like, there have been times where I'll see we'll post a picture of the kids and like, do you want to tag Julie in this picture? And it's a picture of Holden. Yeah.
Facebook is a devil.
All right, let's be done.